Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. In this brave new reality of electoral politics in our country, employers are telling their employees who to vote for and how they can and cannot engage in political activism.
Obviously, if your boss is asking you to do something or asking you to tell what your political view is and has the power to fire you if they disagree, this presents an obvious threat, in my opinion, of many other people.
And how is this going to play out in the end?
I think it's going to be devastating, to be perfectly honest. We've seen what happens in anti-union campaigns. Now employers have the right to make workers attend captive audience union meetings, right? And I think what's going to wind up happening is you're going to start seeing employers calling their workers for these kind of meetings. You're going to have supervisors pressuring workers every single day in the lead up to elections. And we know from anti-union campaigns, this works.
So I'm honored to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio this week, Mike Elk, who is a terrific labor reporter. It's terrific just to be a labor reporter at all these days, but he is a terrific one, and he works for In These Times magazine, which I highly recommend. And Mike has been producing some stories that have found widespread interest and republication in recent weeks related to the corruption of our elections. Mike Elk, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Great to be on the show.
It's wonderful to have you. The first story that you reported that got a great deal of attention that I wanted to have you on the show about is related to a Koch Brothers business that sent a pro-Mitt Romney mailing to 45,000 of its employees. Tell me about that.
Basically, the Koch Brothers sent out a mailing here that basically told workers that if they didn't vote for, you know, they sent out a mailing with an attached list of Republican candidates, including Mitt Romney, and it said that if they didn't vote for these candidates, they would suffer consequences. And they warned about the possibility of inflation, higher gas prices, and they used the word other ills. So this was a big deal, this kind of thing. And then on top of that, well,
and what did that mean, suffer consequences? What did that mean?
Well, it's inferred. I mean, it's whatever you think it wants to mean. If you're a worker who's reading it, it might mean that the business might close down. They're talking about, in the letter, how difficult they think it would be to keep their business running.
Yeah.
So you have this situation, and then at the same time, you have another situation where basically Citizens United has expanded the rights of corporations to talk to their workers about politics. Previously, you know, employers could not campaign in the workplace for, politicians. This was considered a form of coercion. Obviously, if your boss is asking you to do something or asking you to tell what your political view is and has the power to fire you if they disagree, this presents an obvious threat, in my opinion, and many other people's opinions. So while Citizens United has expanded this right of corporations to talk directly to employees, the Koch brothers have decreased the freedom of speech ability of their employees. They've implemented a new social media policy at Koch Industries, which says that if you are an employee of Georgia-Pacific, which is owned by Koch, about 45,000 people work at Georgia-Pacific, if you're an employee of Georgia-Pacific, you no longer can just post whatever you want on Facebook. They have a very clear policy that says that, if you post anything that reflects poorly on the Georgia-Pacific's brand or reputation, you could be fired. They actually have a line about talk towards supervisors, including the owners, the Kochs. They're saying that, you know, you can't talk bad about the politics of the Koch, which, you know, it's really tough to talk about the right-wing political machine without talking about the Kochs, but they have this line. Your comments must be respectful. Do not engage in personal attacks, offensive comments, and angry and or hostile communications. This is pretty broad. And for a lot of folks, what were you going to say?
I was going to say this is on their own time at home, on the weekend, on their computer, on their Facebook page, without even talking about Georgia-Pacific at all, just because they work there.
Yeah, just because they work there, they're banned from doing it.
Yeah,
and we know that Georgia Pacific monitors it, because last year, when Mark Ames and I, after the Citizens United ruling, wrote our first story about how, you know, employers could now campaign in the workplace. We talked with a worker named Travis McKinney, who was upset about some letters he was receiving during the 2010 election. McKinney went was up for a promotion, and he was denied it. And in the his evaluation at the time of this promotion, it says very bluntly that he talks about politics too much in the workplace. So here was somebody who was clearly chastised for their political thought. And other workers have said that they're scared. They said that they don't feel like they can talk about things as much as they want to. You know, a group of workers in Toledo, Oregon, recently posed for a photo of a Democratic state Senate candidate. And then when the photo came out, you could see the Georgia-Pacific plant in the background. And they made sure that the union leader didn't put it on the Facebook because they didn't want to have the Georgia-Pacific brand, this plant, be in the Facebook. So this is scary. And on top of that, Georgia-Pacific has implemented this policy where if you're going to run for office or serve on the board of a nonprofit, that you have to get approval from your supervisor. So literally, workers at Georgia-Pacific have handed over lists of the nonprofits they're involved with to the supervisors to let them know. Now, what if the supervisor doesn't like some of the nonprofits you're involved in? What if somebody's a Jehovah's Witness and the supervisor thinks Jehovah's Witnesses are crazy? Or what if somebody's involved in an abortion or a rape clinic? This is obviously, a new era of sort of a 1984 kind of era of now Citizens United has ruled that employees are considered corporate resources and they can be used in any way the corporation wants to further its political goals. They can even be made to attend political rallies and do work for political candidates against their wishes.
It's I've been looking recently dealing with this case in Boston, Massachusetts, where the Fusion Center, that is the police / FBI / Homeland Security, have been routinely spying on, infiltrating, interrogating, intimidating peace groups and referring to peace rallies as criminal actions and so forth. The behavior of these employers that you're describing, who work for the Koch brothers, some of our wealthiest billionaires in the country, the behavior of these employers seems almost identical to the behavior of our new militarized police forces. They are surveilling and intimidating and controlling the behavior of purely political, purely legal, nonviolent behavior of their employees.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely say that. I mean, I think we're at a stage where I think they've realized the end game here, and they've realized they can intimidate folks and they can do whatever they want, and that they're in a powerful position and that we're just all kind of serfs. It's like we're almost going back to the feudal ages in some ways. I mean, Bill Moore's closed a segment about my piece by saying, back in the 19th century in the Gilded Age, the boss in the company town used to line up the employees and they would all march down to the voting booth as a block and all vote for the same person. Well, now we're getting back to that.
It's incredible.
Just today, two of my friends, George Zornick at The Nation, published an expose on Herman Cain, and Herman Cain is doing this big tour, these seminars for small businessmen on how they can persuade their employees to vote for Romney. He's going around the country touring, advocating, training people on how to do it, providing them with good talking points, and he's telling them that you need to tell them they're going to lose their job. Likewise, we saw Lee Fong of Think Progress did a big story about how the Chamber of Commerce is gearing up a workplace-oriented election campaign that they hope reaches 7 million workers. And they're going to start sending mailings about people losing their jobs at certain candidates' home in the paychecks of workers. So this is a new thread. And then earlier this week, I released an audio tape of Mitt Romney talking to the National Federation of Independent Businesses. And the National Federation of Independent Businesses is a very right-wing group of businesses that has given nearly 98% of its political donations to Republicans. Romney is on his conference call in June, and he closes the call by saying, "I think it's really important that you tell your employees that their job, their future, depends on this election." So this is the stage where we are at, and it's really interesting because there was a lot of U.S. groups, a lot of U.S.-based groups, including Mitt Romney's own advisor, Russian advisor, who criticized Putin for putting pressure, for using bosses that would threaten their workers in election. So this is the the ultimate hypocrisy in some ways.
Yeah, our democracy doesn't measure up to Russian standards or Venezuelan standards. How many businesses do we think? How many employers do we think, whether they were on the call with Romney or not, have engaged in this practice?
Well, we know of already of about a half dozen different businesses, and we think this trend is going to spread some. Lee Fong had a big article about a couple big companies, Caterpillar, Patriot Coal, others that are going to start doing this. And one of Karl Rove's deputies at a firm, DDC, that they specialize in turning employees into like little mini lobbyists. So I think this is going to become a big trend. Maybe not so big this election, but definitely the next election. And we've already seen a lot of different cases. You even saw Congressman Joe Walsh, who's a congressman out in Illinois, say on tape obtained by the Chicago Sun-Times that business owners need to go out and tell their employees that if they didn't win this election, they would lose their job. So this is going to become something I think we're going to see a lot of in this campaign. Not only are we going to see a restriction of the ability of people to vote at the polls because of voter ID laws, but we're going to see people being threatened with their livelihoods if they vote a certain way. I think this is the most restrictive, threatening election for working people in the generation.
We're speaking with Mike Elk, labor reporter for In These Times, who has broken these stories. So it's every single case thus far involve employers promoting Mitt Romney or other Republican candidates? Is it exclusively Republican, or do we think that any employers are pushing for Obama?
I think it's exclusively Republican at this point so far. No other candidates so far have gotten involved in this yet.
Because I've seen commentary to the effect that, there's truth to it. It may be coercive or unfair or inappropriate, but it's simply true that that Democratic policies will cost jobs, and the Republican policies pushed by this this oligarch famous for exporting jobs to China will save jobs. What is the reality there?
I mean, the reality is, look at the Kochs. They've nearly doubled their net wealth during the Obama administration. They're doing very good for themselves, and I think they're going to keep doing very good. So a few of these corporations, I think, are actually going to lose any jobs because of this. I think it's just absurd for the most part.
It seems to me along the lines of sexual harassment. It seems to me like political harassment for someone who is in a position of authority over your career to be urging you to vote and to act in a certain way politically. Why is it not universally condemned the way that our culture has moved against such things as sexual harassment?
Well, I don't think as many people know about it yet as they do know about sexual harassment. So I think that's a big part of the reason of why it hasn't been talked about as much, which is that folks don't really know about it. It's a new trend. It's something that's just coming on the horizon. So I think that's why there's such a big issue with it, that so few folks even know about it.
We do, however, have the ability to vote, such as it is. We don't know that our votes are counted or how they're counted inside these machines, but we have the ability to vote in secret. Nobody stands there and looks over our shoulder unless we're asking for help with the machine. To what extent do you think that employees will simply vote the way that they want to vote and claim to have voted otherwise? And to what extent does this become not actually about how they vote, but about what bumper stickers they put on the car and what flyers they hand out and what rallies they go to and all of this other activity that encourages others to vote that way?
Well, I think it's certainly going to have a chilling effect. If you know your boss is a Romney supporter and he wants all of his workers to be a Romney supporter, you might not want to put a yard sign in your yard saying you're voting for Obama. You might not want to go down and phone bank or recruit some of your friends to do it because you don't want your boss to say anything. So I think it creates a real problem there. It creates a real pressure tactic.
Is this something that has just begun because of the Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court 2 years ago?
I mean, we heard of it in the Gilded Age. It hadn't really happened much. Here and there, you would hear a little bit about it, some boss somewhere. But this is now becoming a big trend, and you see Mitt Romney is even pushing it. When can you imagine, when was the last time a Republican presidential candidate came out and told employers that he wanted to make that they needed to go and tell their employees how to vote. When was the last time that happened? So I think this is going to become a bigger and bigger and bigger trend over time.
Could it backfire? Could there be enough outrage over it that it makes candidates who do it look bad?
Yeah, well, I saw a bumper sticker today from the National Nurses Union, was saying, if your boss tells you how to vote, go join a union. Because that's going to be the only real protection you have in your workplace now on if you want to protect your voters. You're going to have to be a union member, and you're going to have a union contract that protects that kind of thing. Because as you know, 49 states in this country are at-will employers where your boss can fire you for just about anything.
Indeed. It is a problem here in Virginia and everywhere else. I'm interested in how the media has picked up this story, in picking it up from your reporting and producing it in other outlets.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think, a lot of media outlets have picked it up. You know, ABC, The View, Whoopi Goldberg discussed it on her show. The New York Times cited it. The LA Times picked it up. Chicago Tribune. MSNBC had a lot of segments. Of course, the backbone of the media in this country, the progressive media, did it. You know, Democracy Now!, shows like yours, other publications that are small like mine. And, you know, it's gotten a lot of attention. Millions of people have seen this, and I think a lot of people are freaked out by the prospect that they realize that they are now so vulnerable and so easy to be discriminated against because of their political views.
I'm sure you're quite familiar with the media's, the corporate media, the big media's usual lack of interest in labor stories, in union stories, in workplace abuses. If this were not an election year and this were not a partisan story that made one party look worse than the other, and it were not about election campaigning but were about policy-focused political activism, do you think it would have gotten anywhere like the same attention?
No, I don't think it would have gotten anywhere near the same level of attention. I write about similar awful things happening to workers all the time for wanting to join unions, and that almost never gets attention. So, I don't think it would get as much attention.
What other stories would you like to see get more attention these days that are not?
You know, I certainly think the 4,600 Americans that are killed every year in workplace accidents, I think that's a story that is completely uncovered, and people are dying at tragic rates. The rate of workers killed has actually gone up under the Obama administration. So I think that's a story that needs to be covered. And, I think there's so many. It's almost tough for me to name. You know, Verizon, obviously Verizon just accepted the workers there, just accepted big concessions, big contract concessions. And that's a story which got so little coverage. But I do think that when there are inspiring examples in the labor movement like Wisconsin or the Chicago teacher strike, that they do get coverage. And I think that's what to be hopeful about from a labor perspective, is that when they do these big kind of actions, people cover it. But it's also a question of how do labor leaders respond. You look at the Verizon strike. They went on strike for 3 weeks last summer. Then they came back in. And 15 months later, 15 months of negotiation, they settled on a contract, which is the worst contract they'll ever have for a company that is the most profitable in its history.
What about the Chicago teachers' strike? Do you think that was more successful?
Oh, yeah. They certainly didn't get everything they want, but they made gains. They made big improvements, and they got more teachers hired. So I think that was a big improvement, that contract. And, you know, they had a militant strike. And they were willing to wait it out as long as it took.
4 years ago, we had a candidate in Barack Obama campaigning on the Employee Free Choice Act, the right to legally, effectively organize in the workplace with card check organizing. Platform included reforming policies like NAFTA to protect workers' rights and environmental rights. Now, all of that seems to be absent from the discussion and from the debates. Certainly, the other guy isn't going to bring any of it up, and the moderators don't seem particularly interested. How is labor looking at this election that's dominating the news?
Well, I think they're looking at it in through the lens of it's not even relevant to them. They don't see organized labor as a key player, despite the fact that 20% of households have a union member in them. So it's not even a big deal for them in their opinions. So they're not even really talking about it at all.
And yet, labor unions on the national level are no doubt putting significant resources, as they do every time in this election, into this election. Is it less than 4 years ago?
No, they're putting more. They're putting $400 million in the campaign. They're almost matching par for par what the Kochs are putting in. So they're putting in a lot of resources.
In disregard, you think, of rank-and-file union members' choices?
I think to a certain extent, but I also think a lot of union members want to re-elect Obama. They're not happy with him. They wish their union leaders would get it. But, you know, for the labor movement, they see this as the difference between President Obama and Romney. They see Obama as somebody who's a slow bleed that maybe the labor movement can stop, and Romney as a shot to the head. And unfortunately, it's gotten to this discussion of lesser evils, which has really obscured the fact that Senator Obama's labor record is not that great.
Yeah, to put it mildly, there were three new corporate trade agreements put through a year ago that seemed to have had negative effects, as one would have expected, on the U.S. economy, and a new big trade agreement in the works in the Pacific. Would there be more resistance to this sort of agenda in the labor movement if the president were a Republican?
Yeah, I think there would be more resistance if the president was a Republican, but everybody feels like they're part of the table, when in reality, they're what's on the table.
It's a good way to put it. In couple minutes we have left, what do you think the impact's going to be on this election and on the elections 2 years and 4 years hence? Of these new tactics of employers telling their workers what they can and cannot say, and intimidating them into voting as the employer wishes.
I think it's going to be devastating, to be perfectly honest. We've seen what happens in anti-union campaigns. Now employers have the right to make workers attend captive audience union meetings, right? And I think what's going to wind up happening is you're going to start seeing employers calling their workers for these kind of meetings. You're going to have supervisors pressuring workers every single day in the lead-up to elections. And we know from anti-union campaigns, this works. You know, the average worker in an anti-union campaign is forced to attend 5 captive audience union meetings. And that's why you have anti-union campaigns where at the beginning of the campaign, majority of the workers support it, but by the end of it, a majority don't support it because enough fear they're going to lose their jobs. And it doesn't take all the workers. You see, they're not going to trick people like me and you, David. It takes the folks that are lower information voters, the folks that are just hoping that, you know, they can keep their job. Those are the folks that I think are going to sort of create a situation where this kind of really has a deep effect.
They're going to believe either that a vote for Romney will protect their job, or that a vote for Obama or some other better candidate won't do that much good for them or the world anyway, and vote as the employer wishes.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the best possible response we could come up with? What's the good news and the takeaway that people should go and participate in and get busy working on?
I think unionizing workplaces. I think this gives even more impetus about why it's so important to organize a workplace in this kind of situation, because that's going to be the only protection folks are going to have in a union drive.
Good, very useful advice as always. Mike Elk is a standout labor reporter for In These Times magazine. I encourage you to check out his work. Mike, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks for having me on, David.
And lest I forget, I should say this more often, this show, Talk Nation Radio, is engineered by Christiane Brown, who has her own wonderful show that she hosts called The Solution Zone on Progressive Radio Network, PRN-FM, on the web, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and on iTunes, and all of the past shows are archived at PRN-FM. Highly recommend checking them out. A final word on one of the many troubling aspects of this week's election. The presidential election of 2004 left much to be desired. millions of votes were suppressed, and the evidence is overwhelming that votes were flipped by interested parties. Bob Fitrakis and Harvey Wasserman summarize, quote, "The widespread use of electronic voting machines from ES&S and of Diebold software maintained by Triad allowed Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell to electronically flip a 4% Kerry lead to a 2% Bush victory in the dead of election night. ES&S, Diebold, and Triad were all owned or operated by Republican partisans. The shift of more than 300,000 votes after 12:20 a.m. election night was a virtual statistical impossibility. It was engineered by Michael Connell, an IT specialist long affiliated with the Bush family. Blackwell gave Connell's Ohio-based GovTech the contract to count Ohio's votes, which was done on servers housed in the old Pioneer Bank building in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Thus, the Ohio vote tally was done on servers that also carried the email for Karl Rove and the National Republican Party. There are no doubt honest people who have looked at the evidence and disagree that the election was stolen in 2004. There might even be, although I can't imagine how, people who have looked at Ohio 2004 and concluded that what went down was a respectable electoral process, up to all international standards and beyond all possibility of doubt. I'm even willing to concede that someone somewhere honestly thinks allowing private companies to count your votes on computers in a manner that can never be verified is a reasonable approach to democratic self-governance, given the complete absence from all recent history of any private company ever engaging in any questionable practice that might radically increase its profits. But according to a credible report from 2005, one key person who eventually came to understand that Ohio was stolen was the candidate from whom it was stolen, John Kerry. Kerry reportedly said that he did not want to speak out about this because he would be accused of being a sore loser. His running mate John Edwards, who by various accounts opposed conceding the election in 2004, has since been disgraced as an adulterer. Let's set aside for the moment the question of whether adultery is worse than election theft. What I want to know is this: would allowing the 2012 election to be stolen be a price worth paying to avoid the unpleasantness of John Kerry being called a sore loser on TV? Why would the 2012 election be stolen? Well, there is the matter of how the 2012 primaries have been conducted, and then there are the basic facts laid out by the least likely media outlet in the world to twist them in favor of my argument, Fox News. See the links on the website, davidswanson.org. Again, let Fitrakis and Wasserman summarize. Quote, "Despite an almost total blackout from the corporate media, the Romney family has a personal ownership through the investment firms Solomir and HIG Capital in Hart InterCivic, which owns, maintains programs, and will tabulate alleged votes on machines in the critical swing states of Ohio, Florida, Virginia, and Colorado." End quote. If you think it might be helpful for Senator John Kerry to speak out now, give him a call at 202-224-2742. That's 202-224-2742. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christian Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.